Hello and welcome to this presentation. Its title is the Fujitsu Micro 8 and its bubble memory drive. My name is Fritz Hohl and I run the blog randocwordpress.com, and I invite you to have a look at the blog if you're interested in topics like that. But let's go now into this presentation. Let's first talk about the manufacturer of this computer. Fujitsu is a Japanese multinational information and communications technology equipment and services corporation, which was established on June 20, 1935, which makes it one of the oldest operating IT companies after IBM and before Hewlett-Packard. It manufactured in 1954 Japan's first computer, the Farcom 100 mainframe, and in 1961, it launched its second generation computer, the Farcom 222 mainframe, which was transistorized. Fujitsu, especially at the time of the manufacture of this model, was also a major chip manufacturer, and they ceased their business only in 2014 when they spun off their chip manufacturing business. Fujitsu, being one of the major computer companies in Japan, also developed then personal computers, and the FM8, the Fujitsu Micro 8, is a personal computer developed and manufactured by Fujitsu in May 1981. It was Fujitsu's second microcomputer released to the public, after the Elkit 8 kit computer, which is more a single board computer like the KIM 1. The FM8 would later be replaced by two new models in November 1982, the FM11 aimed at businesses and the FM7 aimed at the mass market. Fujitsu aimed at achieving a state-of-the-art computer for 1981, and I think they also achieved their goal. This computer model does not only feature two CPUs, two 6809 CPUs, but it used also the first 64 kilobit DRAM chips in a microcomputer, giving it DRAM capacity of 64 kilobyte, a VRAM capacity of 48 kilobyte and 44 kilobytes of ROM. It was also the first microcomputer to have bubble memory drive as an option, and we will see this option in a moment. But let's look at the other features of this computer. For example, Fujitsu had a quite good graphics for the time, with 64 by 200 pixels in 8 colors, and it had also 80 by 25 text mode by using 8x8 pixels. Now, Fujitsu, being a Japanese company that produces also for the Japanese market, or in this case only for the Japanese market, has of course the problem of not only needing to be able to display Latin characters, but also Japanese characters, especially kanji characters, which are the Chinese characters. And these characters are so complex that 8x8 pixels are not enough for each character, so they have also a 16x16 pixel mode with a correspondingly reduced set of characters that can be displayed at the same time at the, on the screen, that is capable of displaying also these kanji characters. It has its own Microsoft BASIC called FBASIC, and a whole slew of interfaces, from cassette interfaces to three different display output possibilities, to a cartridge interface, an expansion interface, an RS-232 interface, and a printer interface. The initial price was quite high for that time at 218,000 yen, which is about 290,000 yen today, or about 1,690 euros currently. Which is, I think, it's very typical for Japanese computers, is that there were also many options internally and externally for this computer. So over time, you not only can buy ROMs for these kanji characters for 30,000 yen, but also FAT80 cards, 8080 cards, floppy drives, and the like. Operating system wise, also the FM8 was no slow. Apart from basic, you could also buy OS 9 for it, 6809 OS 09. A Fujitsu own development called Flex, USCD Pascal, and CPM80 if you used the optional FAT80 card, and even a CPM86 if you used the 8088 card. As I said, it was a state-of-the-art computer in May of 1981, so let's have a look at the competition in May of 1981, or at least in this year. And we can see that there was devices like the Sharp MZ80B, which was at 278,000 yen, including a display with only 32 kilobytes of RAM, no graphics, but the built-in monitor. And we see slightly later devices like the Toshiba Passopia at 163,000 yen with the same amount of RAM and slightly more colors. And also later on in November, we see the NEC PC8801 at a little bit over 200,000 yen with the same amount of RAM and VRAM, but even less colors. And of course, in August of 1981, we then see the IBM PC for a considerably larger amount of money, with a considerably smaller amount of RAM in the initial price configuration that we have here. So we see that in 1981, especially in May of 1981, this machine was really cutting edge, included all the bells and whistles, all the features that there were, but it was a quite expensive machine. As I mentioned, this thing has two CPUs, two 6809 CPUs. The first one was the main CPU, the second one was responsible for the graphics. It's some sort of completely independent processor using its own boot ROM and running its own programs. So it works this way, that the graphics subsystem with the second 6809 receives requests from the main CPU and then executes them. This is done by some communication using a 128-byte memory area, which is used exclusively by the two CPUs. And it works like this, that the main CPU writes the memory area using some commands, and a second CPU completely stops, interprets the commands, and restarts after the main memory was released by the first CPU. This not only sound quite slow and cumbersome, it was, and it didn't produce high-performance graphics unless one of Fujitsu's BIOS programmers left several hidden commands in the BIOS and the community learned about them. And these commands then permitted to transfer large binary programs to a reserved memory space and jump to it, and only after discovering this hidden command, the model had enough graphics performance for fast games, and programmers could use this performance. As I said, one of the most innovative features for the time was the bubble memory option. And if we would have a look at the price lists that I showed before, we could know that the internal bubble memory drive offering two cartridge slots costed about 85,000 yen, and that each of the maximum of the two 32 kilobytes module costed 35,000 yen, which totals the maxed out configuration at the time to 155 kilo yen, or $1,400 today. But What is and what does bubble memory at all, and how does it work? If we look at Wikipedia, we see that bubble memory is a type of non-volatile computer memory that uses a thin film of magnetic material to hold small magnetized areas known as bubbles, each storing one bit of data. Non-volatile, of course, means that the content is preserved even after you switch off the power. So it's the same effect as for flash memory drive. You can store data and you can read the data even after you have repowered up the computer. This magnetic material is arranged in the form of a series of parallel tracks that the bubbles can move along under an external magnetic field. We will see how this might look like in a moment. These bubbles are then read by moving to the edge of the material, where they can be read by our conventional magnetic pickup, and then they need to be rewritten at the far end of the chip to keep the memory cycling through the material. So you have some sort of delay memory. You have a chip and the magnetic bubbles, the information travels along the path of the chip. It's read at the one end and then needs to be restored at the other end and then can travel again through the material. If we look at this slide, we can see on the left side probably animation of how this could look like. You can see here not very highly implemented bubble memory chip with only I think 53 bits. This was an old NASA project, and you can see how the bubbles move along the structures on the chip. They are created at the one end, they move along the chip, and then they arrive at the other end where they can be read. If we look at the schematics on the right side, we can see that the inner structure is a chip of a certain structure, and this chip is enclosed in two coil structures which are orthogonal, and then on the top and the bottom are two permanent magnets which provide a permanent magnet field towards the system, and then there's of course some more electronics to it. If we have a look at how a bubble memory chip really looks like, I have found in the net a very interesting series of photos by Wolfgang Robel, who took a bubble memory chip and dissected it to see what's inside. So you can see that on the left side, this is the bubble memory chip as it would be coming on the PCB. It has a substantial tin case around it, and if you remove this tin case, you can see the top magnet layer and some wires in the middle. And if you then remove this top magnet layer, you can see the two orthogonal coils around the chip. Next, you can remove also these coils and you find a PCB inside. And on the PCB, you finally find the bubble memory chip, which has a certain structure. And here you can see the structure of this very chip under a microscope. Now, this seems like a much more complicated system than, let's say, chips today, let's say a flash chip, which is simply a chip in a normal packaging. Here you don't only have the chip, you have a PCB on which the chip is mounted, you have coils around this PCB, you have a magnet layer. So this seems to be quite complicated and expensive. But in fact, it was an easier option than the standard memory at the time of the development of bubble memory. Because bubble memory started out as a promising technology in the 1970s, offering the memory density of an order similar to hard drives, but performance more comparable to core memory while lacking any moving parts. So in the 1970s, the situation was that for RAM, core memory was used, and core memory is mechanically also quite complicated structure that partially needs to be handmade and which seems more like being tailored than being made in an effective automated process. And bubble memory offered basically the same memory speed as this core memory, but was much easier to produce because the inner core was a pure chip and some wrapping around it, which was much easier to produce than core memory. At the same time, the density of memory of this chip was comparable to hard drives of that day. And this led to consider many bubble memory as a technology for a universal memory that could be used for all storage need, that could be used both as RAM and both as mass storage. Which means that you would need not two types of storage as today, like RAM and mass storage, like hard drives or flash drives, but you could use the same memory both for both uses. Now, the system was developed bubble memory, but after some time, dramatically faster semiconductor memory chips instead of core memory was introduced. So the RAM aspect of bubble memory was not so important anymore. And then also dramatic improvements in hard drive capacity and also price made it quite incompetitive to have bubble memory because hard drives could simply store much more for even a lower price later on. And then finally, the introduction of flash memory and similar technologies rendered even niche usages incompetitive, and bubble memory disappeared entirely by the 1980s. The development of bubble memory is largely the brainchild of a single person, Andrew Bubeck. Bubeck had worked on many kinds of magnetics-related projects through the 1960s, one of which was the development of the so-called twister memory. Twister is essentially a version of magnetic core memory that replaces the magnetic cores with a piece of magnetic tape. The main advantage of this version of Twister is its ability to be assembled by automatic machines as opposed to normal core memory, which was almost entirely manually assembled. Unfortunately for Twister, DRAM memories came into the market in the early 1970s and rapidly replaced all previous random access memory systems. And while developing this Twister concept, they found an interesting side effect, which was noticed in production, namely that under certain conditions, passing a current through one of the electrical wires running inside the tape would cause the magnetic fields on the tape to move in the direction of the current. And if this effect was used properly, it allowed to store memory pushed down to the tape and pop off the end, forming a type of delay memory on the tape. And because it was so promising, this technology, by the mid-1970s, practically every large electronics company had teams working on bubble memory, which we'll see in a moment. Texas Instruments introduced the first commercial product that incorporated bubble memory in 1977, and by the late 1970s, several products were on the market, and Intel released their own 1 megabit version, the 7110. By the early 1980s, however, bubble memory technology became a dead end with the introduction of hard disk systems offering higher storage densities, higher access speeds, and lower costs. And in 1981, major companies working on the technology closed their bubble memory operations. Now, we see that this technology was quite hot in the 70s, very hot in the mid-1970s, and almost dead in 1981. But still there were basically no real products for bubble memory. So it was obviously a high-tech feature that Fujitsu thought would be very interesting for home computers. But at the end, as we know, bubble memory was used only for niche applications, and these were these applications which required reliable working in mechanical debanding environments, because it did not use any mechanical parts in contrast to hard disks, and flash memory was not even on the market. This would happen from 1987 onwards. So let's have a look at some bubble memory products which were on the market. As I said, Intel was one of the contenders. Later on, the bubble memory operations of Intel was renamed Memtech. And you see there on the left side a bubble memory chip by Intel, and on the right side a cartridge version of bubble memory. And this was typical for many of these companies. They didn't offer only a chip that you can put on your PCB, but they offered also a cartridge version, something like nowadays a USB stick, which you could put in bubble memory drives and which could be exchanged quite easily, showing this double aspect of bubble memory drives as RAM and as mass storage, and the cartridges of course satisfied this mass storage aspect. We see a cartridge from Sharp here, we see chips from Hitachi and Texas Instruments, we see chips of course from Fujitsu, and even in the USSR bubble memory chips were produced. The lower line of products are more final products for computers. So on the left side, we see a bubble memory disk drive from Intel for Apple II computers in 1982. And it offered 128 kilobytes of bubble memory for about $900. Then we see a card from Rockwell, probably made for the IM65. HP offered a bubble memory option for the 200 series workstations, $1,900 for 108 kilobytes, and even IBM had a bubble memory prototype. Let's have a look also at other computers that incorporated bubble memory apart from the FM8. One such system was the Konami Bubble System, which was an arcade video game platform introduced in 1984. It featured interchangeable bubble memory cartridges on a 68K based CPU board. And the idea was that you could simply exchange the game by exchanging the bubble memory cartridge on the system, but it was too expensive and was replaced soon afterwards by a different system. The bubble system in this system and in all other systems required a warm-up time, in this case of 85 seconds, for this arcade video game. You could then see a timer counting down from 85 seconds to zero. That was needed on cold start before the game was loaded, because the bubble memory drive needed to heat up the bubble memory to about 30 to 40 degrees to operate properly. And you see this need of a delay on startup for every computer using bubble memory, even for the FM8. Also not always the same time. Another company that used bubble memory was Sharp in their PC 5000 laptop from 83. Here bubble memory was used as RAM, and it came in sizes from 128 to 256 kilobytes in their own proprietary cartridge. Another company, Nicolette, used bubble memory modules for saving waveforms in one of their oscilloscopes, as did HP. Nicolette, by the way, used Fujitsu cartridges. And finally, Grid Systems, the company that did many firsts in notebooks and laptops, used bubble memory in one of their early laptops in the Grid Compass in 1982, where it was used as mass memory, I think, 384 kilobytes. And finally, we are back at the FM8, the bubble memory products that Fujitsu offered for the FM8 were first the MB22601, the internal memory drive that could be built in the FM8. The FM8 had for this purpose quite large hole on the top on which this bubble memory drive could be built in. This hole was not used for much more and is sometimes titled smartphone holder because it has the size of a smartphone. For this bubble memory drive, Fujitsu offered 32 kilobyte cartridges, the FBM33CP. There was also an external bubble memory drive, the MB22605, which allowed usage of the last version of the Fujitsu bubble memory cartridges, the 128 kilobyte FBM C128GP, which could be used for that purpose. So to conclude our presentation, bubble memory was a hot technology in the 1970s that was hoped to replace both RAM and mass storage cost efficiently. And because Fujitsu aimed at developing a technologically advanced model with the FM8 compared to the competition, it used also bubble memory drive as an option for this computer, but this model was expensive and the bubble memory option was unpopular because it was even more expensive. Therefore, Fujitsu replaced the FM8 only in the next year by the highly popular FM7, which is basically a cheaper FM8 without a bubble memory option, and the office market FM11, which already looks like a PC, but is in principle the same architecture as the FM8 and as the FM7. The FM8 remained the only home computer with bubble memory option from the start. As we saw, there are third-party options for some other computers, but they were even more obscure than the one of the FM8. And soon, bubble memory was made obsolete by faster RAM and cheaper hard disks. Thank you for your attention. If you want to have a look at an FM8 bubble memory drive, I'm not sure yet whether it's working, but at least you can look at it. Please come to the FCFB 2021 exhibition booth and you can see a computer with two cartridges. Thank you very much.